Dear friends, Bhagavad Gita, as we see, is a thorough science of leading a goal-oriented, practical life. Theory and practice here go hand in hand, and therefore every chapter of Bhagavad Gita is named as some yoga. Yoga means to bring the theory into practice. What one understands as a theoretical concept has to get converted into a tangible, practical living experience. That is the true religious or spiritual life. Only understanding some principles and verbally acknowledging them could only be a part of it, but very minor part. It could be first step for some, but then one has to go to the next steps of implementing it, making our life fully replete with that knowledge, with that understanding. Then alone we can reap the benefits of it. Otherwise, we get only on the first step, and then no step is really a place to live on. A step is always meant to go to the next step. You don't live all the time on a step. You just climb the step to get to somewhere. So intellectual understanding is very good, very important, only as a first step. So in Bhagavad Gita we have been seeing that how different facets, different faculties of our life, all different aspects are tuned to this central goal of life. Like the four wheels of our car, when we need to go to a destination, all four wheels have to go in that direction. So similarly, all the aspects of our life need to be given this actual shift. It is not just looking at the directions and maps, but you have to actually drive, and so you have to turn all the wheels in the proper direction to get there. So getting there is important, and to that end we have been seeing different types of yogas in what we have been studying since last two classes. It is a yoga that is discernment between the perceiver and what is perceived. The perceiver is called Kshetrajna, and perceiver is called Kshetra. There are different words used in Vedanta. You will find a few other words also are used to denote the same idea. One very important is the Kshetra and Kshetrajna. That we see here, and another is Drik and Drishya. The Drishya is what is seen, what is perceived, and Drashta or Drik is the one who sees it. Kshetra means the field of our perception, the whole vista of our perception through the sensory organs, motor organs, mind, intellect, all the hardware and software combined as the instrument of perception. All that we perceive from that is called field. And who is the user of this instrument, who is perceiving, that is called Kshetrajna. So The description of these is going on here. This discernment is a very central idea in Vedanta. One who desires to know the truth has to have this discernment as to what is the truth and what is not the truth. And thus a separation, what is real, what is unreal, separated. And there is a practical criterion given by Vedanta for this separation, because the question may come, what should be called real, what should be called unreal, how to know that. And then a very nice idea is provided for that, and that is whatever is permanent, unchanging, that is real. Whatever changes is not real. So whatever you consider as changing, and know that as the appearance that comes and goes. Because it changes, what does it mean that it is seen and then afterwards not seen? Perceived, and then while we perceive it keeps on changing. Our perception keeps on changing, and then it vanishes into kind of oblivion. So therefore we say that it's unreal. It is just an appearance. Like we say, people are born and they grow. Always a continuous shift, continuous change. And then they vanish, they die. So it is just a particular form, we associate it with a particular name, and then that is an appearance that is not real. What is real? That which does not change. Now what is that? That is the Kshetrajna. And we were seeing how to get to that Kshetrajna, the perceiver, the reality. And the second verse of this 13th chapter that we were seeing last Friday, a very important verse. Conclusion that it presents is really counterintuitive conclusion. It kind of negates what we normally understand. It just says that that's not right, and therefore it really needs to be pondered deeper. That it says that the self, the perceiver, the I, in all different bodies, is God alone. Kshetrajñam chapi mam vidhi sarvakshetreshu bharat. In all different fields, in all different entities, in all different names and forms or clusters thereof, the perceiver, and God says, I alone am the perceiver. The perceiver is not different at all in different bodies. How different it is! We have the intuitive understanding that I here, the perceiver here, is certainly different from the perceiver there. Look how different our perceptions are. If the perceiver is the same, then we would be seeing similar or same thing. Look how our intentions differ. Intention of A is different from intention of B. So how do you say that the inner perceiver of everybody or in every body is the same? It is certainly a statement that sounds very baffling at the outset. Let us concede that, friends, that it is not something that our intuition immediately will accept and support. Yes, yes, the I in everyone is same. This understanding of it itself requires a deep analysis, something that we can say, thinking out of the box too, that it is because we are accustomed, we are restricted, constricted by this assumption that I here is different from I there. If they are all same, then how I am miserable and the other is happy? I am ignorant and other is learned. The other fellow gets fortune going his or her way, and misfortune somehow chooses me. It is how if we are all same, all should be happy at the same time, or all should be miserable at the same time. All should be wealthy or poor. Some people, they have innate good tendencies, they are kind-hearted, some are cruel people. How do we say that the inner reality of all of them is same and that is divine? How can I believe that a very cruel person like Genghis Khan or Hitler or such was divine? I can't imagine that God is their reality. And I can to some extent understand a person like Jesus or Sri Ramakrishna or Mahatma Gandhi or whatever, such good, compassionate, kind people, God in them, God is their inner reality, I can feel that. But when you encounter all these bad people, cruel, just merciless and selfish people, how do you think that God is a reality of them too? And so it this statement, if we look at it in the ordinary sense, it just opens a can of worms, that how can we understand this? So many difficulties come when we look at this statement. If we try to implement it, see how many difficulties will come. We said in the beginning, we made this statement that Bhagavad Gita is not just theoretical, poetic or sublime thing to be just intellectually thought about, but it is practical. Think of implementing this idea in the practical sense, that yes, the self here is also the self there. And I see somebody robbing me, how can I say that the I here is the same as that of a robber that is robbing me? Could it be same? I can't imagine. I am eating a chicken, for example. How can the I of that chicken is the same as the I who am eating? Can I feel that the I of the bedbug that is sucking my blood and giving me a painful sensation, the I of the bedbug is same as my I too? And so does it mean then I should not kill that bedbug because it is like killing me? Then I should not eat anything because then it's like I am eating myself. Does it mean that? Can this statement have the possibility of practical implementation? at least look at the possibility of it. Is there a practical possibility of implementing this statement that the same I is in everyone? It appears certainly quite baffling. And who is making this statement? Lord is making this statement. Certainly a most responsible person is making this statement. Who is omniscient? That person is making this statement. And not only that, we find this made by all the great sages who realized this truth. Who experienced this truth, all made this statement. You will find this statement repeated by all great sages of ancient times as well as modern times, that yes, the Self is same in all, and that is God. You come to that perception. So it needs to be probed further. It should not be just brushed aside that it is all silly. And since this statement in Bhagavad Gita is so silly, probably the whole book is not really worth studying. Maybe it has some gems, but accidental. But it doesn't seem to contain that kind of wisdom. Look at this statement. It just falls on the face of it. But it is false on the face of it only because we do not probe deeper. When I had made on some such occasion, not about this statement, that this scriptural statement is false on the right on the surface of it, you can see that it is false. Then my teacher said, yes, it is false only on the surface. Only on the covering it is false. Go deeper and the truth of it will come out. So let us try to feel this statement that the I that is perceiving, what is that I? Do you think that there are one I in my nose and another in my eye and another in my hand, another in my leg, another in my ear, and another my intestines? Are there different, all these are different parts of the body. They have been just tied together somehow. So do they have different eyes? So no, there is the same eye. Suppose now you temporarily put something, disconnect from the body. Imagine that my hand, is it I? Imagine that it is surgically, temporarily separated for some reason and then joined again. Now, is that hand I? Is there the same I in it or different I? Just, friends, give it a thought where is my I that I think is. We all are sure that there is I in me. That nobody doubts that at all, that there is I. About that we are very certain. Nobody ever thinks that has lost the I. That story, you just remember, I have told it a few times, that a child in a big fair, going with his parents, the parents go in one direction in the crowd, the child is not able to find them, starts crying. And then one gentleman asked me that, well, Hey, laddie, are you lost? And while crying, he wipes his eyes and says, well, no, they are lost. I am right here. I never gets lost. I am always there. It is, let us, nobody ever doubts about that. I am, that is an experience that is universal. There is no getting away from it. I am. Even to negate it, there has to be an I. I am negating it. It is an experience that is with everyone. And so, now, where is that? Is it in my nose? Is it in my forehead? Is it in my nails? And when I therefore cut off the nail, part of I, does it go away? So, we come to the conclusion that in all pieces of matter that I consider this body, there is the one single I. There are no two I's there. Now, when I say eat a chicken, what happened to the I of the chicken? Was it different? And then, where did it go? Then did my eye change because now the chicken got a part of me? We'd say no, it is the same eye. Now so if we extend this, the eye in everything, there is no characteristic that we can show as distinguishable. The bodies are distinct. But just as the shape of nose is different from shape of ear, yet there is only one eye that is using this instrument. So also there is who else is using the other instruments? How to show that they are separate, distinct from each other? Is there a way to show that I hear as distinct from I there? You will see that whenever we will try to specify something that here this I differs from that I, we will discover that the specification only belongs to either body or to mind, not to the I. So where do you separate I here and I there? And therefore this statement is actually true, that I here, they are all same. There is no multiplicity in I. Multiplicity of bodies, yes, it is infinite, infinitely varied bodies. But how many screens are there when you see the movie? Only one screen. Since you see there are millions of figures coming and going in the movie, are the screen many? Only one and the same screen you see all the pictures coming and going. So the screen, you can see that the, just as an analogy for understanding, that the, this is kind of a movie. Imagine, you know, that this is a big movie on a super IMAX theater, you know. It is, we are all like the 3D pictures on it. The movie is going on the screen, and the screen is like the self. Now, just as there is no different screen in the different pictures of the movie, same screen for the virtuous and the vicious, same screen for the angel as well as for demon, no different screens for the hero and the villain, same screen for all of them. It is so in this world, all different things are there, all different manifestations, but the self that penetrates in and through each of these, that is identical, same, and it does not change, irrespective of all the changes that go on in the movie. There is no fun. If there is no change, do you go to watch a movie where you see only one single picture on the screen all the time? You won't like to watch. There is continuous change. That is why it is called a movie. It is a movie. It keeps on moving. It keeps on moving, keeps on talking. Action movie. People like to watch it more. And that it is an action-packed movie. So, this is all action-packed. And yet, what happens to the screen? Does it change? Even if you have a big war scene there, lot of bloodshed, not a single stain of blood on the screen, it just remains as it was before the movie. It does not get wet if you see lot of torrential rains in the movie. Even if you see a big fire in the movie, I saw that movie, Towering Inferno, long back, you know, old movie. And it was such a wonderful, realistic picturization. The photography was so good that many staying in the high-rise buildings, they just gave up staying there. The prices all over this United States for the high-rise, they came down enormously because of that movie, that Towering Inferno. And while you see that it is big fire, the placebo effect, like that effect was there, like you feel the heat as it were you are in that while watching it. And yet what happened to the screen? It doesn't get burnt. All the fire is on that. It doesn't get even warm. It is similarly, this self does not go have any change. It does not come, it does not go. The movie keeps on going, changing. That is this world. The self, therefore, this is an analogy to understand. The Upanishads give many beautiful analogies. One of them is that look, when we introduce ourselves, we say, like he will say, I am Chris, he will say that I am Mike, she will say I am Millie, and she will say I am Triveni, she will say I am Ritu, and he will say I am Sam. What is the common thing that everybody said? I am. And so the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad says, look, everybody uttered their true real name first. And then the changing thing later on, that name is not to be considered as real name. If suppose Mike thinks that my name is not right, I want to change it, then he can change it. It is not really his name. It is a given name. And these are given names. You can change them. People anyway keep on calling us names in spite of our wanting that. It is these names keep on changing. They are not our real names. What is our unchanging name? I am. And that is same. That is our true identity, which is same in all of us. And that sameness, that oneness, is really the prompting cause of all our efforts. Oneness. We move towards that. our joy comes through that experience of oneness. Because that oneness is our true nature, it is the source of all bliss. It is the source of peace. So when we have that idea of peace, we want to get rid of all separateness. When we feel, I did that, leave me alone, one. It is that I is same in everyone. That is our true name. That appears as many, like the screen appears as manifold changing faces. The same one screen appears like many, many continuously changing bodies. Without losing its oneness, the screen doesn't become many because our seeing many there. So also, because we see many, that doesn't make actually many at the level of our true self. That is same everywhere, and that is therefore everywhere. And when we start getting this feeling, we become more and more spiritual. Becoming spiritual is therefore seeing the self in everyone. And that is a very important practice, not only for Hindus, it is so for Christians and Jewish people, as well as Muslims, as well as Buddhists. See that oneness with everyone. That is how Jesus quotes, that love thy neighbor as thyself. He doesn't say that he is saying it, it is his teaching, no. He says, have you not heard that it is said, earlier also you find that in Old Testament as well, that love thy neighbor as thyself. The students of Vedanta will be able to understand it more clearly, this idea of thyself. That as you love this self, see the same self in other and love it. Just as you love yourself, you consider your neighbor also having the same self, love that. So that is a statement that is very practical, and that is the process for getting our life in a spiritual mode. It is instead of having that separateness which automatically increases selfishness in us, that I am separate, you are separate, so I have to get all the pleasure. You go to dogs, I don't care. It is we don't like such feeling. We call it not the right thing. It is a devilish idea to just be selfish. Why so? Because it is against the nature of reality. The nature of reality, love, we like it. And the feeling of love, we all like. The love is loved. Why we want to love? The characteristic of love is feeling of oneness. That the self here and the self there, they are one. When people love each other, they sense that oneness. Now, whatever belongs to my beloved belongs to me. Whatever belongs to me belongs to my beloved. They, as the love is advancing, you see that this feeling of oneness also becomes more and more advanced. Now what passes for love in the world is really not love, but more of a just giving our various desires to possess a nice name, our attachments, our selfishness, and that is given a nice name, that love. Otherwise, why love would get converted into hatred just because the person I was loving, I didn't do something that I wanted? And we see that happening all the time. At one moment, lovers may feel that we are one. Next moment, why did you do like that? And the anger wells up. In fact, murders take place between these so-called lovers. Why does it happen if it is love? Because it appeared like love, no doubt. But the love part got mixed up with the division of these physical pieces. And thus, there was not oneness of the self perceived there. It was more like attachment. My. And that becomes selfishness. It is not really love. Just as you say, I have lot of wealth. I have lot of relatives. It is, that is also equal, just as selfishness for money. I have lot of money. I have lot of relatives. Not different at all. It is that people consider it as their something, get attached into it and get tied to it, and thus lose the essence of the universality of the self. Friends, this is a very important thing to pay attention to realize. As I told in the beginning, not the simplest thing to understand, but without understanding, without intellectually and emotionally accepting, and without trying to practice it, the spiritual life will not progress in the right direction. And therefore, this verse is so important. As I was telling in the last class, that Shankara, the great teacher of Vedanta, in his Bhagavad Gita commentary, devoted a lot of space for discussion of this particular verse and this particular line, in fact, that the self in all is one and the same. There are no two there. It is the two, the division is only in appearance, not in reality. In reality, there is the one. It is not the numerical one, friends. Let us remember this fact when in Vedanta you read about the one. That is not a numerical one, but an all-embracing one, that all numbers and non-numbers and everything is contained in it. It is like the oneness of the screen. Take up the same example for a convenience. The oneness of the screen is not like the one object that is seen in the screen. That is a different thing. The screen is one, encompassing all the multiplicity that one can see on the screen. That is how even you will see the Jewish, that Kabbalah, they say they one. That one is not to be confused with 1, 2, 3, 4, no. That one involves every distinction. It contains everything and yet is not contained in anything. That one being in all, that one being eats through all mouths, sees through all eyes. When the practicality of it is very interesting. Therefore, when I am eating, remember that this is just a box or a one hole to put the things in. It is just as you can actually get your nutrition in various different ways, and not only through mouth. You can be given your nutrition in an intravenous manner too. It is now, does it go to two different cells? The eater is one. So also all these different mouths they are eating, where does it go? That goes to one single being. In Chandogya Upanishad, this idea comes in such a beautiful way. It is a nice story that a king was thinking that, oh, see, my glory extends in all these spheres. I am a noble king. I have lot of wealth, and my glory has spread all over. My name, my fame is spread all over as the best king. Then one of the birds passing through heard king's thoughts as it were, and to make the king aware said that, well, his glory is nothing compared to one poor man who is just has a little cart, does probably the loading unloading business. That person is more glorious. Later on it says, because that person knows the secret of eating through all the mouths. That eating through all the mouths, you know that you are in all different bodies. You hear through all ears. You see through all eyes. Friends, it is not an imagination. It is actual experience of the sages that you can see through all different eyes. You can hear through all different ears. You can walk through all different feet. You are walking on all different feet. It is very beautifully described in one of the famous hymns in Vedas called Purusha Sukta. Sahasra Shisha Purusha Sahasraksha Sahasrapad Sabhumin Vishvato Vitva Atyatishthad Dasham Bhujam Purusha Evedalam Sarvam Yad Bhutam Yaccha Bhavyam. The meaning is that this is the one being with thousands of heads, thousand, not numerical thousand, means infinitely different heads. That one being thinks through all heads. Just as if you are working through 10 computers, if you have 10 computers, you are working through all these 10 computers, so why could you not be thinking through all different heads? That one being uses all the different heads. Sahasra Shirsha Purushaha sees through all the eyes, walks on all the feet, eats through all mouths, breathes through all noses. So that is the one being. It is a very sublime, very profound, and spiritually very powerful, effective idea, friends. Let us therefore try to feel this idea that there is one being and that is in all different bodies. The bodies, they are different, small or big, but the self doesn't become different. Sri Ramakrishna used to experience this truth every moment. Never had therefore this idea for him that the I here is different from I there. He would say, many times he described how his experiences are, trying to give different analogies for our understanding, that just as you see the different these cushions, and you can see these cushions that you are sitting on, the outer these shapes could be different, the colors could be different. Now in this particular case they are similar, but you may have different things, and yet inside the same stuffing is put. So similarly he used to say, all different beings I see as different cushions, different these covers of cushions. Some are round, some are square, some are big, some are small, and yet inside all of them there is the same substance. So similarly, all different things, they have the same one single being. There is no duality whatsoever at that state. And therefore, to give up that state, to give up the ignorance that we are different, and to get to that state of realization of this truth, one starts practicing that no I and mine, and that what divides it, this is mine and this is not mine, and this is yours. So you practice this, that no I and mine. It is, let us not lay some kind of a proprietary claim on anything. We are using it in that sense, it is mine probably, but you don't have any claim on it. It is, nothing is mine, it is, and nothing is that is not mine either. Of course, don't that therefore go to grab somebody's things, and just now I heard there is nothing yours, and so everything is, it is not in that sense. It is that let us not have any proprietary claim on anything. It is tough, but it has to come to, if we want to grow to our spiritual wisdom, then this idea has to come in life, slowly, slowly. That is practical spirituality. Slowly means going fast is not a problem, but even if you are not able to go fast enough, like a Sri Ramakrishna or a Vivekananda, let us take our baby steps. But the direction is important, that let us practically learn to expand our awareness that the I here is same as I in everywhere. One beautiful statement in Taittiriya Upanishads expressing this idea, that it says that what is food? It says that ahamannam, 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 three times it repeats. When the sage realized this truth, he says, Ahamannam. I am food. Ahamannadoh. I am the eater of the food. The food and the eater, same one. See how it will transform our eating. That not that we will be fasting after that, but our eating, the quality, spiritual quality of our eating will get completely transformed. That idea of I am the enjoyer and that is the enjoyed, that will go away. It is the same one I that will be felt in the food as well as the eater. And actually you see the great souls realizing this idea in their life, they have erased this distinction of separate I in the world. When we see the separateness of I, then it is the source of all devilishness in the world. It is devil. Ignorance is devil. And therefore we see people committing such acts. But when you see that sameness, that oneness of the self, then you see all the divine qualities manifesting there. Compassion comes, love comes, consideration comes, forgiveness comes. And we forgive ourselves very easily. Not forgiving others doesn't come that easily. It is forgiving. That example is very beautiful, that about oneness. That suppose you bite your tongue, if your teeth bite your tongue, you don't go and smash your teeth, break them. You forgive, it is after all my teeth and my tongue. You don't need to break your teeth for that. So, similarly, the true forgiveness rises when you start seeing oneness. And this is, in the experience of all sages, that their minds were so full of universal love, therefore, without any attachment. Both these things are so clear there. Total lack of attachment and all comprehensive love. If we are attached, then what we call love is really the selfishness given another name, that's all. So, therefore, friends, let us learn practicing this idea in our life, like eating food, dealing with others, interacting others. Let us take baby steps, that the same I in different bodies, and see how our life gets transformed by that. Then the next line, of this verse, the second line of this verse says that the knowledge of this both, the knowledge of the perceived, the kshetra, the field of perception, and the knowledge of the perceiver, both are valid knowledge. Not that one is of less importance, another is of more importance. Both are valid knowledges. This statement is very important in practical religious life, because the knowledge of the field, you can classify it as, or name it as, or understand it as what is called science. And knowledge of the self can be considered as spirituality. They have no conflict. Both complement each other. God therefore says both are the knowledge. That is his matam mama. That is my considered opinion. So, let us understand this, and then from next verse he will give the characteristics of both, what is the field, field of perception, and what is the perceiver. He will give more clarity, more characteristic of those, so that we can feel it more intensely. And we shall try to see that from next Friday onwards. Any questions?
Just one more.
Okay.
In devotion, we subject ourselves to anesthesia, while inquiry is the process of performing surgery. Can devotion and inquiry simultaneously coexist?
This has a reference to in one of the earlier classes, long time back, I guess. I told that the process of knowledge and process of devotion, in both cases we have to do surgery. There is anesthesia is given not to avoid surgery, but to make the surgery less painful. That you avoid the pain while undergoing surgery. In devotion, the surgery is not avoided. It is wrong to think that it is only anesthesia. Only anesthesia type devotion will not work. That people praying only for the pleasant things. No, that is not devotion. Oh Lord, keep me always healthy, and keep me always prosperous, kill all my enemies, and all that kind of things. That is not a real devotion, although it could be pleasant. The surgery has to be done, only choice is whether to do it with anesthesia or without anesthesia. Most of us who do not have that much control on our these pains, they will go for anesthesia. Okay, I can't withstand that pain. The pain threshold in the society is going down continuously. Earlier people used to have surgeries because there was no anesthesia, doesn't mean that they didn't have surgeries. There are pictures in the old medical history books that if a leg has to be amputated, the fellow is tied, held by 3-4 people, in that, imagine the agony. But then it is, if it is not done, the fellow is going to die soon. So to prevent the infection from spreading, you have to amputate the leg. No way you can avoid that without causing an immediate death there. So surgery is to be performed, no anesthesia. In my childhood too, these many dental things were done without giving that nevoquine and such things. Even not too long ago, root canal performed on my teeth, it was done without giving any nevoquine. It is because when I said, oh, it will give pain, no, what's there, a little bit pain, and you don't need to really give there. So it was done without that. So the threshold of pain is different for different people. What I am hinting at is, there are many people, their number is comparatively much smaller though, who don't want to have that anesthesia. The problem with anesthesia is that it has some after effects, and so you want to avoid that. So you go for surgery without anesthesia. But most of us will require anesthesia. So, having devotional approach is surgery. You have to get rid of ignorance. There is no doubt about that. The ignorance has to go away. But, okay, your mind is turned to God. Instead of forcibly tearing you away from unreality, and your mind is turned towards God, so that that unreality drops off itself. So that is the only difference. And the idea that the questioner has is probably in devotion you avoid surgery, only anesthesia. Is that the idea? So, if that is the idea, that is not devotion. Anesthesia and surgery, or no anesthesia and surgery. These are the only two options. So, it is true that in most people would have the devotion. And so, that simultaneous part, means the surgery part, is common in both. There is no getting away from that path. And so, a devotee does have the knowledge aspect, and the one who is going by the path of knowledge has a devotional aspect to it, internally more. That person, he or she, is keeping the pain out through rationality, or putting the mind, tying it with the self rather than with God. So these are minor differences, really, not very major ones.
I have a question.
Yes.
When you say, I am eating through all monks, what is I there?
That is what is mentioned here. This is a good question I asked many times, that how, what is I, when you say that I am eating through all monks. It is.
Because I want to add more to you. The I there, if you talk as self, then there is no act of eating whatsoever. It is just a witness. But if you are talking about eating, act of eating, then it comes to a relative scale where you have all this multiplicity with the different parts.
No, even when there is action, there is no multiplicity. Not only in perception, sakshi, as they say, witness, there is still the many, the act of witnessing is there. And when you are eating, there is the act of eating, and yet that does not sully the awareness of oneness. And that is very significant, that there is the eating through all mouths. The feeling is described there as the one eater is there in all bodies, and the food that is going in all bodies, that is going ultimately to one place. The one that is getting the food in all different bodies. So that is this Vedanta, therefore, is not only sitting and witnessing, it is acting, it is working, and yet the awareness of one does not get sullied by that. It is a person that is active. Look at Lord Krishna, very active person. But that I am the self of all, that doesn't get corroded or mutilated by this action. The actions like killing others, that also doesn't get vitiated by that. See the Sri Ramakrishna, that one day one of his devotees, he was practicing Vaishnava, Balram Basu his name, and he had the doubt, because one principle there is non-violence, and it is understood by many as physically not killing anyone. So he had, he found bed bugs in his bed and had the doubt, now should he kill the bed bugs or not kill them? So he decided to go and ask this to Sri Ramakrishna. And while he went there, he saw Sri Ramakrishna killing bugs in his bed. He had taken out his bed and was killing the bugs. Then he got the answer. He got the answer from that, that yes, the bed bugs are to be killed without having the sense of duality. That yes, it is the same one entity. It is not many there. So, Sri Ramakrishna obviously did it to teach him, because nobody else ever saw Sri Ramakrishna killing the bed bugs. There is no other description. Only this one description you get there. So, it is a very active principle that I eating one eye, using all mouths to eat, and it is a very beautiful principle, very sublime. The wordings need not throw one off, don't take them too literally. But it means this, that in and through all different names and forms, it is the one being that manifests. It acts and it doesn't act. That both are there. It acts, it doesn't act. If you see that being active, you feel that it is acting. And yet it is not acting at all. Both are there without any contradiction. So, this is a very different principle. Yes, Charles?
Isn't it selfish to kill the bed bugs?
If you think like that, it is selfish.
Uh-huh.
But then all other things that you do, that is also equal. If you take an antibiotic, think of that. If you take, have say some infection and you take antibiotic, is it selfish or not then? Same idea. So, an infection right here, or an infection that is coming to you through the bug on the bed.
Right.
So, you are in both places killing the bugs. So, is it right or not right? In fact, that is a mass scale killing. When you take antibiotic, they are killed kind of en masse. It is. You are giving a weapon inside for mass destruction of the bugs. Here you may kill 5, 10 or whatever. So, it is not selfishness and selfishness. If a person is selfish, thinks that I am this body, then whatever that person does is selfish. Not only killing the bugs. Whatever that person does with this awareness, he is selfish. Do you, when you blow your nose and throw out, do you think that, oh, what a selfish action I am doing? You don't think like that. Yes, George, it is time, you know, 8:45 almost.
The Indians, they have a broom and they sweep in front of them because they're afraid they'll step on an ant.
Yeah, but then they don't step, but they, maybe the broom steps on it, you know. The feeling is very good. I endorse the idea, the feeling behind it. But let us not presume that that means no killing at all. Instead of killing it by their feet, they kill it by the broom.
Yeah. Well,
so it doesn't make the... outer.
You have to live in the sterile jar. You have to live in the sterile jar or something.
And then again, how do you make it sterile without killing? So, there is no escape from the external killing. You breathe, you kill. You rub your face, you kill. You eat, you kill. Otherwise, you kill yourself. Again, that is killing. So no escape from killing there. So let us conclude with the closing prayer. May He who is Father in heaven of the Christians, Holy One of the Jewish faith, Allah of the Muslims, Buddha of the Buddhists, Dao of the Chinese faith, Great Spirit of the Native Americans, Ahur Mazda of the Zoroastrian and Brahman of the Hindus, lead us from the unreal to the real, from darkness to light, from death to immortality. May the all-loving being manifest himself unto us and grant us abiding understanding and all-consuming divine love. Peace be unto all. Gita Sugita Kartavya Timanya Shastra Vicharehi Ya Swayam Padmanabhasya Mukha Padmanvinishrita Ekam Shastram Devati Putra Vedam Eko Devo Devati Putra Deva Eko Mantrah Tasya Namani Yani Brahma Ekam Tasya Devasya Seva Shri Guru.